Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Julia Whittup with Talk Story Radio, and we have with us today, again, Matt Palomari, sorry, talking about fantastic fiction, and that's spelled with a P-H-A-M-T-A-S-T-I-C. So, and your tagline is a shamanic approach to story. Could you expound on that?
I sure can. So when we had that really great interview last week, we talked about my fascination and passion and interest in shamanism. And it ties in directly with my writing and my teaching and my writing approach, what I've learned through the years. So what I discovered through all my research and experiences is the roots, the very roots of the hero's journey. So I know on your show here you have a lot of writers who are part of your audience. So for writers, and other people who may not be quite familiar, Joseph Campbell wrote a wonderful book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces. This was the book.
Correct.
And Joseph Campbell was a wonderful, in my humble opinion, the world's greatest mythologist. He was really amazing. And what he did in The Hero with a Thousand Faces is he, for lack of better words, he kind of divined the essence of the hero's journey. And what he did with that in that book, he's got a large body of work, but in this particular one, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, he found that the concept of the hero's journey was cross-cultural and worldwide. Every single culture had some version of the hero's journey, and every story that we know and that we've experienced and seen, whether you know, on film or books, follows the hero's journey. So one of the things that has drawn me to shamanism is the fact that the roots of all spirituality and religious belief go back to shamanism. It's the very beginnings of spiritual thought goes back to shamanism. And one of the primary hallmarks of shamanism and shamanic transformation is the shaman's journey to the underworld. And it's, again, a universal theme, you know, that I say universal, but worldwide. And what happens in the shaman's journey is he or she must travel into the underworld. And when they go into the underworld, they get dismembered, destroyed. In South American Indian cultures, they get swallowed by the jaguar. I know in the Maya, if I remember correctly, the Maya culture and other cultures, indigenous cultures, they'll go into the underworld and get dismembered. You know, there's myths of them getting their bones taken out and then quartz crystal bones put in instead. It's transformation. And in this journey, as you know from Jungian psychology, whether realistic or metaphorically, however you want to call it, the journey into the underworld of the shaman is in essence him or her facing their shadow. And as you know, the shadow holds, you know, the deepest fears. And the shadow isn't necessarily all bad, but mostly what we've repressed and denied within ourselves are in the shadow, and it's what we are terrified by the most. So,
and don't you think that the shamanic journey is actually, I believe, let me see what you think of what I'm about to say, that the shamanic journey is a journey into the collective unconscious rather than just that personal unconscious.
That's true to a large degree, but I think you have to get through the personal unconscious to get to the collective.
Ah, okay.
You know, in my experience, it's kind of a cliche to some degree, but, you know, you can only get what you can handle kind of a thing. And if you are, for lack of better words, trapped in your own stuff and your own fears, then you have to overcome them in order to, in shaman terms, in order to become a man of power or a woman of power. But it's interesting what you just said, because one of the, and I think we touched on this briefly in our last interview, but one of the definitions of shamanism is to be a bridge. So a shaman is someone who can go to the other realms, whether they're doing what's considered soul retrieval or to the other places, go and retrieve that knowledge and then bring it back for the rest of the world. And in doing that whole exercise of facing the shadow and the fear, they become a man of power or a woman of power. I mean, that is a prehistoric thing, literally. You know, pre-literate, pre-language, it goes back that deeply. Now, here's the interesting thing. That is the shaman's transformational journey to the underworld, and the transformation and the trial by fire. And if you look at the cover of my book, it's a shaman dancing in the middle of fire. And the whole myths of trial and transformation by fire, being burned into ashes and rising again as the phoenix, those are all the same thing. So in a long-form story as a novel or a film, the hero, and I'm really doing broad strokes here, but the hero starts off in their home life, so to speak, and everything's normal. You know, life goes on and this and that. And then something comes and upsets the balance. And then the hero goes on the quest to restore the balance. And in the process of going on the quest to restore the balance, they have to face the force that has prompted this to happen. And the force is metaphorically and ultimately our shadow selves. But they have to go and they find a mentor, and then they have to go literally into the underworld, into the abyss, into the darkness, and face that. And it has to be very much life-threatening. And if they do that and they recover, then they get, you know, in story, they get a power. So, you know, going back in history, the search for the Holy Grail, if you follow some of the most popular stories of our present day culture, such as Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, and Star Wars, they all follow the hero's journey exactly to a T. As a matter of fact, there's a wonderful, and I can't remember the name, I had the DVD collection, and I've given them away twice now, but it was an interview with Joseph Campbell while he was alive. It was Joseph Campbell with George Lucas, and I can't remember the interviewer's name now. It'll come to me. But anyway, they talk specifically about the hero's journey and how George Lucas consciously made Star Wars modeled after the hero's journey. And I have absolutely no doubt that by doing so, he really hit the collective archetypes, like you just mentioned, the collective. Everybody, deep in their psyche, is connected to the hero's journey. It's that deep of a meme, so to speak, in our culture, in our psyche, in our collective. So when people see that, they respond. And if you look, like I just mentioned, those three films and stories are three of the most absolutely rabidly popular in our culture. And it's because, in my home, you know, they hit those universal truths, so to speak, those universal archetypes. And everybody relates to them on some level. It makes sense deep inside of our psyche. And every single story has those elements in it, particularly in long form. Short stories, maybe fudge a little bit here and there, because short stories are quicker. They're sort of more like an event or a thing as opposed to a long series of things. But regardless, the essence of the hero's journey is exactly the same as the shaman's journey to the underworld. And in fact, I keep thinking of the Maya. They have the hero twins that go down to under the Lords of Zabalba. And they have to go and rescue their father. And they fake out the Lords of Zabalba. But the point is they have to go down into the underworld, face the forces of darkness, which ultimately in the end, as we sort of all know, are deep inside of us. It's all the shadow stuff and the stuff that we don't want to look at. So that's the overall, that's the arcing overall hero's journey, shamanic approach in that way, but there are lots of nuances and elements and smaller things that are important. So I think I mentioned in our last interview that shamans see absolutely everything as energy. It's all energy. So when you're writing a story, so when you're writing a story, you're actually manipulating energy. Every single thought represents an energy. Every single word represents an energy. So if you were to write a story that was, for argument's sake, full of passive voice, the whole narrative and the whole flow of the unfolding action will be slow, and it will be really lagging. But if you were to go in there and really pay attention and get rid of as many adverbs as you can and minimize the adjectives and use as many active verbs as possible, active verbs have more energy to the fact that they are active as opposed to passive. So when you're going, you know, to that level and choosing your words carefully, the more active words you choose, obviously without going overboard, the more energy your narrative has, the more your story pops, the more literally alive it is because it's active and it's moving. Then, and then there are other subtleties even beyond that, like punctuation. Punctuation, one of the things I read years ago, and I teach it and preach it all the time because it's wonderful. Punctuation tells you how to breathe. So a comma is soft, slow down, and keep going, almost like a not a pause, like when people slow down at the stop sign but don't quite stop and they keep going, kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then a semicolon is a stop. A period is a little more of a stop. It's a little harder, maybe a couple more micro beats between a semicolon and a period. And then like an exclamation point is like jamming on the brakes. So if you're consciously aware of how you are punctuating things, then you're sending words and thoughts at a particular pace. And you're also subconsciously telling your reader and or audience, if it's film, how to breathe. So if you have a very, you know, it's a horrific or a very tense, dramatic scene, you can punctuate it in a, for lack of better words, in kind of a jerky way. And the person can be reading that story and then they're getting this jerky punctuation. So they're reading the story and then subconsciously and inside themselves, they're breathing. They're like that. And you're manipulating them on a whole nother level of tension beneath the surface by how you punctuate. So,
wow. What would you say of stream of consciousness writing like Steinberg or whatever her name was?
Steinberg. Well, I'll just address the stream of consciousness.
Okay.
It depends on the mental state. So there are you can only have very intense dramatic scenes for so long and you're going to wear your audience out. So you have to have an ebb and flow to it. One of my writing teachers years ago described it as pulling a rubber band tight and then loosening it, then pulling it tighter and then loosening it. If you pull a rubber band three times, a little more each time, to the point of the third time you pull it where you snap it, that is the essence of a three-act play or a three-act story, which all stories have three acts regardless of their size. So depending on the mental state of the person is how you would punctuate and structure that in that way. And if you have a lot of high tension, at some point you need to find a way to relieve the tension or you're going to wear your audience out. You know, slam, bang, crash, nonstop doesn't work. So there are times, typically, after an intense dramatic scene or encounter in your story where you want to give your audience and your reader time to breathe and relax and catch up. And those are the times when you get into more inner thoughts or philosophical musings when there's not a lot of heavy action going on. So you have to pace it and you have to relieve the tension and build it up again. As a matter of fact, that is actually, among other methods, that's actually the definition of comic relief, the original sort of definition.
You need that relief.
Exactly. And one of the best examples I've ever seen, and this is something I teach from all the time as a good example, is the film Schindler's List. And there's a scene in there where, you know, it's most people have probably seen the film, and this isn't a big spoiler or anything, but there's a scene in there, you know, all these poor Jews are in this concentration camp. And Ray Fiennes there, that actor, plays up just evil, you know, commandant. Mm-hmm. So all these poor people are starving. And it's men, women, and children. They're all emaciated and everything. And somebody steals a chicken because they're starving. So in
right.
this scene, yeah, so in this scene, he's got them all lined up. Like, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred of them, all lined up. And they're all standing at attention, and they're all half-starved. And the Ray Fiennes character is walking up down the rows. Who stole my chicken? And nobody says anything. And he walks a little bit further, and he asks again, who stole my chicken? And, you know, everybody's, you know, they show the prisoners, and they're all shaking, and they're all wide-eyed, and they're all, you know, in fear for their lives. And then he's walking down, and he says again, who stole my chicken? And nobody says anything, and he has his Luger and he pulls it out and he puts it right at this guy's head and blows his brains out. And you're shocked. It's a horrific moment. I mean, you're like, oh my God, how can it get any worse?
Mm-hmm.
So right after he shoots this guy in the head and he hits the ground and he goes, you know, who stole that chicken? This little like 8-year-old kid runs up and points to the dead guy and says, he did. Well, yeah. It was
perfect.
Brilliant, because it was a really horrific, morbid moment, and that's what this kid does. And you do as when you're watching that, you get to breathe a sigh of relief, and it lets the tension out a little bit. So
yeah,
you know, like that, how you pace the story. So you know, the nuances are there in the words, and the punctuation, and the comic relief, the overall pacing, and how you are presenting the story. And also, you kind of referred to a little bit, whose point of view are we seeing it from? You know, whose head are we in? How are the perceptions filtered? And how are they, you know, relayed to the audience?
Okay.
So it has, you know, a number of levels where it's applied.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of what I've put in the book and what I teach, when I lecture at the Southern California Writers Conference, we don't call it fantastic fiction. We call it, he likes to call it transformative narrative, because the other aspect of shamanism and story is transformation. The hero, when they begin their journey and go through all the ordeals and come back, they're not the same as when they left. Their perception of reality has changed. The world has changed. And in shamanic terms, because of the ordeals, they have become a man or a woman of power. And then there's a whole, you know, psychological metaphor that goes along with it in Jungian terms, you know, in terms of facing the shadow and integrating your abandoned selves or your lost selves or all those traumas that you have. You can integrate them back in, you become more complete, more whole, more balanced being by facing your fears, basically, and understanding where they come from. So there's you know, really, really sort of broad strokes that can be done. It really applies on multiple levels. And much of what I teach and much of what I learned came from people like Ray Bradbury, who was one of my big mentors, and then tons of others that really took me in at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference where I'm teaching. You and I were talking earlier. I want to mention to the audience there that the Santa Barbara Writers Conference is going to be June 5th in Santa Barbara.
Yeah. And is it too late to, it's not too late to register, is it?
No, it is not. I think there's another, they do an advanced submission thing. And I think there's another week when the advanced submission door will be closed, but it is not too late to register. And the registrations are going very well this year. And the address is SB, as in Superman Bob, sbwriters.com.
Okay.
Yeah, and it lasts a week. And over the years, you know, Ray Bradbury kicked it off for 37 years every year. And,
wow.
And way back, you know, through the years, we've had people like Alex Haley and, you know, Elmore Leonard and William Styron, Eudora Welty. The list goes on. I could sit here all day naming off names, but it's really had that much prestige. James Michener, yeah, he came. James Michener came, said I could only stay for a couple of hours when he came to lecture, and ended up spending 4 days there.
he changed his mind.
He loved it. It's such a great, great environment. Another one was Elmore Leonard. He came for a day and spent the week. And Charles Schulz, you know, Charlie Brown Peanuts, he came in the beginning for a day, and it was one of his only vacations every year. He would come and spend the whole week there. And
he liked it so much the first time.
Yeah, and it's so much of a nurturing, wonderful, it's my writing family environment. His son, Monty, who's also a novelist, Monty Schulz, bought the conference and now owns it. So it's really an ongoing thing, and we have a lot of really great people who have been teaching there for some years and some newer people, and it's a good thing. So I really wanted to mention, because I learned so many things from those guys, Bradbury and Charles Schulz and Chuck Champlin, who was the leading LA Times film critic for 25 years, Barnaby Conrad, who started the conference. He was a big, big, big bestseller back in the day. They were all like my writing uncles, and they've passed on some really wonderful things to me. So all of that is also incorporated into the whole fantastic fiction book and the workshop that I teach. And
Matt, since we're kind of running low on time, could you tell people how to buy the book, Fantastic Fiction?
Yes, thank you very much. All of my books are on Amazon, Kindle, and iBooks. All anybody has to do is Google my name, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Palamary, and that's P as in Paul, A-L-L-A-M as in Mary, A-R-Y. My webpage will come up. Tons of other things will come up. And if they go right in directly into Amazon and just search my name, I have 10 books in print. But Fantastic Fiction is one of my nonfiction books. And it won last year. I forgot to mention, last year it won the International Book Award, first place for writing and publishing.
Great. That sounds like that's a high achievement.
The awards are cool, but what I love the most about the awards, aside from the cool gold sticker that can get attention for your book, is the validation, you know? I get validation from people who are doing this contest who could care less who I am.
Right.
You know,
and on
so
something
that
you worked so hard on.
Absolutely. Yeah, years, literally years. It's 25 years of teaching condensed into this book. And again, like you'd mentioned, it's Fantastic Fiction with a PH. It's ebooks and all that, and in print, ebooks and tree books.
I still like the printed books.
Me too. But I have to tell you, well, the younger people these days, I did the show with you, and I did a print interview, and I did a television interview all within about a week.
Yeah.
And my ebook sales went really nice and up, and my print book sales didn't move as much. But when I do a live event, I sell lots of tree books. You know, it's ebooks and tree books. That's how I refer to it. That's
tree books and tea books.
Ebooks and tree books. Yeah, I was told that years ago, and I said, I like that. I'm going to take that and use that.
I like that too. Tree books. Well, yeah. I really appreciate you being on the show, Matt, and please feel free to add me to your press release list. I would love to get your press releases.
Okay, yeah. We'll get one up for this show, and the other one, we'll do a dual one there, and I'll get it out to you.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to let the audience know before we sign off?
Yeah, sure. Very quickly. Santa Barbara Writers Conference, it's a week, June 5th. And then in September, if they were to go to writerscomics.com, it's the Southern California Writers Conference. We'll be doing a weekend in Irvine in September, and then it's getting ahead, but President's Day weekend here in San Diego, the three-day weekend, is also the Southern California Writers Conference. There's two of them, so I'd like to mention that one too. And then my webpage, www.mattpalamary.com, and just Google my name and that will come up. Come on down, and if anybody has any burning writing questions or any burning questions of shamanism, you can reach me through my website, you know, pop me an email. If you're on Facebook, come and say hi. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, I'm all over the map like that. So come on down and say hi. Anybody's welcome to check in.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Julia, for having me. And as I say, I'll get a press release out about our double shows here, and I'll get it off to you, and we'll spread the word tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Julia.